All right. Even up after 2 weeks. It's early, of course. Yesterday was strange. I mean, you know, first team ever in regulation the Giants became to score three or more touchdowns and not allow one and lose in regulation. But Washington had the ball seven times and didn't punt once. That's pretty damn encouraging, even though they didn't get the ball into the end zone. Ben Standig was there, and Ben Standig is with us every Monday and Friday, right here as our Washington Commanders insider. You can follow Ben on X on Twitter, at Ben Standig. You can read him in The Athletic, and you can listen to his podcast called Last Man Standig. So I'll start where I start with you on every Monday during the season. Give me your big, you know, takeaways from the win.
Yeah, you know, it's, I tweeted my story out earlier, and I used the word, I think I said they were like more fortunate than good necessarily across the board to win, but they still, you know, got it done, yada, yada, yada. And I had some people come back at me at that. And as you just said, it's the first game in history for a team to score three touchdowns, not give up any, and lose in regulation. I mean, it's a pretty weird game across the board. That said, when you, as you said, with the offense scoring every single time they had the ball, no touchdowns, but, you know, moving the ball down the field, you know, even the last two drives when they're down three and they need, you know, at least field goals to tie and then to take the lead, I didn't really feel that like, oh boy, here we go again. This isn't going to work out. I kind of felt like they would figure it out. Obviously, there was, you know, again, some fortunate moments here and there, some penalties and what have you on the Giants, but I was impressed by what the offense did. And, you know, I think leaning into the Robinson-Eckler combo is just such the obvious thing to do. And yet we have seen the obvious thing get ignored at times over the years. So I'm not just going to say, well, that's, of course they should have done that. And, you know, with Daniels, you know, the first half, it felt a little bit like last week where he's maybe getting some of that, you know, jittery feet every time there was any kind of pressure. He was also getting pressured, but, you know, to be moved, but as the game went on and after he left, when he got that one hit that knocked his wind out, you know, he really started to seem a little bit more patient in the pocket, finding guys rather than just running around. So I think that's definitely encouraging for the offense. Defensively, I think, you know, look, if Graham Gano does not get hurt on the opening kickoff, right, then I don't know where this game goes. That's at least 3 points that were taken away, probably because of extra points. And just even on the Giants' last drive, they had the ball.
Fourth and four, they kick a field goal, sure.
Yeah, so, you know, there's possibly, you know, 6 points if they get wiped out. And I know you can play the if-but game all the time. But the defense, you know, the pass rush was minimal, one sack for the second straight game. The cornerback situation is, you know, dicey to say the least. I mean, they were fortunate that Daniel Jones is, you know, wasn't the Superman version of Daniel Jones that we've seen. Malik Nabers was kind of getting whatever he wanted. But, yeah, I mean, again, they got a win. I think it's a huge psychological win for the team, for the organization, for the fan base, regardless of where things kind of go over the next few weeks. But so there's definitely growth, but at the same time, I didn't even mention, you know, all the false start penalties in the red zone. There's still a lot of stuff they need to clean up. It doesn't feel like a team that's really one to watch out for in the short term, but at the same point, you know, they got it done, and the offense definitely seemed like it took a step up.
Yeah, so, I mean, I had at least a hunch that maybe offensively they'd be better than people were expecting because I was so in love with the quarterback, and so far so good through two games. I mean, whatever, we got a long way to go. I also was really, really optimistic that the defense would be better, and it hasn't been. I mean, it was pretty bad last week, but at least there were signs, you know, Ben, that you and I talked about. First down defense was pretty good last week. They actually got some pressure. Yesterday, they got shredded in the run game. The play action, which Daniel Jones really needed, made it, you know, the run game made it so much easier. They couldn't cover Malik Nabers. I don't know how many people will be able to cover him. He is clearly looks like he's the next elite guy out there. But my God, what are they going to do personnel-wise? I mean, what can they do? Who? Jamin Davis didn't play yesterday. I'm curious as to why.
Well, for him specifically, you know, we'll talk to Dan Quinn later today, and we'll see if we can get something at him on that. This is my best guess. So Cleveland Farrell popped up on the injury report on Friday, didn't practice on Friday with a knee issue. And they then the next day brought up Carlos Watkins from the practice squad, a guy who's played defensive end, a veteran guy, played with Dan Quinn in Dallas. So I'm guessing they might have thought, hey, we need to have somebody there in case Farrell doesn't play. Well, he does end up playing. And now I guess they're looking at it like, well, we have so one of these guys has to sit. I don't know if it's just as simple as we use the move on Watkins, so let's use him, or if this is any kind of reflection on where they are with Jamin Davis. But yeah, I don't, you know, look, you played 12 snaps the first game. I don't know how much of a difference his presence would have made, but it is interesting in light of just, you know, we're still kind of wondering where this experiment is going.
Yeah, I'm not sure I really followed your answer. Sorry, and it's probably me, but Cleveland Farrell pops up on the injury report and they bring up Carlos Watkins instead of just leaving Davis on the active roster. What am I missing?
Well, no, they bring up Watkins on Saturday in case Farrell doesn't play on Sunday. But once Farrell is playing on Sunday, now they have to decide.
Gotcha. But and they because they used the move, they wanted him active for his five snaps or whatever it was, rather than, you know, losing that move and not having him there. I got it. My fault. Yep.
That's my assumption. He also could play some defensive tackle, and Johnny Newton being, you know, a little bit unclear what he would do. So.
Yeah. Was there any sense as to whether or not the Ballore penalties, the hold looks like a takedown and a hold on the opening kickoff, and it probably was significant in the return. What happened on the next kickoff where he was called for unsportsmanlike conduct? We never got an explanation of that on TV.
Yeah, well, so I don't know. It was kind of a weird day. We couldn't hear a lot what was going on. With whatever the refs were saying, and you know how this goes. By the time one thing happens, you're already on to the next play. So I don't really know what happened there myself. And I've been watching back some of the game, but I've been focusing on the offense so far. So I haven't gotten to that point. But by the way, like if you ran, other than getting hurt, Nick Ballore could not have had a worse first play for a new team. It's a borderline impossible to erase a 98-yard. Kickoff return for a touchdown on your very first play. Or I guess he played last week, right? Whatever. For first play on the active roster, part of the 53. Either way, yeah, not good. I mean, that seemed like such a jolt. And then the fact that it got taken away just seemed emblematic of, you know, how things have been going for this organization over the years.
Yeah, but we don't know what the unsportsmanlike conduct was for.
I don't. The communication, like I said, if you guys didn't get it on TV, I mean, we didn't get anything where we were. And, you know, by the time we get downstairs after the game, that was definitely not a main priority at that point.
Okay. Back to the defense as we talked to Ben. What can they do personnel-wise? What Forbes was down. He'll be down for how much longer? I mean, I think seeing Mike Davis out there was kind of an indication of why Forbes has actually continued to be out there. He's slow. Didn't tackle well, although I don't know how you're going to tackle Malik Nabers when he catches it on that hitch and puts his foot in the ground and spins out of it. But what moves do they have here defensively?
I think at corner, the only moves are to sign somebody either off of somebody else's practice squad or a free agent. I don't think there's – look, this was already an incredibly thin group. I think we've all sort of discussed how, like, the Mariota signing – was maybe the one move that Adam Peters made. We were like, I don't know. But I was sort of defended it from the standpoint of, look, they had to get a backup. At that point, there weren't a lot of guys available. He was arguably the best guy. Okay. But the Mike Davis signing to me is sort of more notable in that regard because obviously there's a lot of cornerbacks available. If they don't want to sign somebody to a big, you know, a lucrative contract, even for like a one-year, you know, $5 to $8 million deal, okay. But there's still a lot of other guys, and Davis's career, you know, just looks like a guy who's, you know, kind of just a guy. And that they were bringing him in knowing that Forbes, there was still a lot of questions about what he would be, right? Sanders still promising. Well, I guess he came in before Sanders still, but, you know, like even if they were going to draft a corner, it would still be a rookie. So this guy was going to, in theory, need to start. Be at least a poor man's Kendall Fuller to some degree if you need somebody. And, you know, the secondary in general looked more limited as the summer went on. And, yeah, I mean, you know, I know people are up in arms over Forbes, but you're right. Davis being out there, I think, showed people why they're going with Forbes' upside over what he provides. But the reality is they don't have, you know, there's not much else they can do. All they have on their practice squad are Bobby Price, who they brought up yesterday, who basically has been more of a special teams guy, and Anousian, the undrafted free agent, so can't think that's going to be automatically better. So there are free agents out there. I don't imagine they're going to sign anyone. But to me, it does kind of feel like, hey, you've got the cap space. This is not about trying to necessarily win this year. It's about trying to make everything else reasonable and sustainable. And if you have such a glaring weakness, it just feels like it's going to be really hard. But then on top of it, if you're not getting a pass rush, then it's going to make any holes in the secondary, even relatively minor ones, look that much bigger.
We are talking, of course, to our guy Ben Standing. So let's go back to offensively. I am going to be curious because I do like watching it the next day, especially when the All-22 comes out, because I think there are probably plays that Jaden missed, especially in the first half, that, you know, potentially led to sacks, potentially were missed opportunities. I think Noah Brown on the double move, the stop and go, that looks like an opportunity to let that ball go early. But still so much good compared to, you know, a few of the nits to picks on things that he didn't get to. Are you, you know, I'm just curious after the game or if you've talked to anybody, what's your sense on how you think they feel he played?
Yeah, I mean, I think all things considered, I think they're pretty, you know, pretty optimistic and pretty excited for what they've seen. You know, again, this is two games now. I know he had a fumble against Tampa, but, you know, they didn't lose it. So no turnovers through two games. You know, again, in the first half, I thought he was a little too jittery. Pass rush was coming, but it seemed like that was calming down as the game went along and he was finding some players open, you know, in space. I think, you know, again, utilizing Robinson and Eckler as runners and, you know, safety valves in the passing games is such a big deal because right now, look, you know, they're until Terry McLaurin gets going with this new offense, you know, they've been easily the two most effective pieces that they have. And then those two combined with Zach Ertz really gives him, Jaden, you know, a lot of viable options in a relatively short range to hit on. And, you know, this opens things up to go down the field. I was just looking right before we started talking about how on the Noah Brown 34-yard catch in the game, if you look at the replay, the giant safety, Tyler Newbin, drops down towards the box because Austin Eckler is in the game. But Eckler stays in the block, and when that happens, Newbin still is closer to the box than he is deep center, and that's where Jaden throws right over his head to Noah Brown. So, you know, to get everything, you know, sort of like we're talking about with the defense where you're not getting the pass rush and secondary to sort of mesh right now, the run game and the passing game, I think, did much better job of that here. Again, you know, not a lot of explosive plays down the field per se, but I think it was a good sign of where things are. And again, I think Jaden Daniels, he's just been calm. He's been poised. Zacchaeus actually told a couple of us after the game that Daniels was kind of laughing, even laughing and smiling a lot in the huddle on the final drive or two. Not because of, like, you know, him being goofy, but just like he takes it all in stride. You know, he's not getting overwhelmed, no matter, you know, even if he, you know, makes mistakes or something. And I just think that's such a huge deal to have that confidence and poise. And I think, you know, the results should continue to get better as it goes along.
Any injuries out of yesterday? Yeah, out of yesterday.
Not that I know of for sure. You know, a couple guys. Obviously, Jaden was hit, came out for a play, said it was just getting the wind knocked out of him. Sam Cosmi left briefly, came right back in. So nothing that I know of at this point. Again, we'll talk to Dan Quinn later. We'll see what he tells us about that and other things.
Tell you what, that looked like a big-time rib shot, actually. I'm glad it was just the wind getting knocked out of him. All right. Appreciate it as always. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, man. See ya.
Ben Standig, everybody. At Ben Standig on X on Twitter. Read his recap of the game. All right, we'll go around the NFL. 11 games yesterday decided by 7 or fewer points. That's next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980. TheTeam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The biggest plays and clutch moments.
Oh, look out!
It's time to go around the NFL.
Right, Anderson!
Carr on the quarterback sneak. Up and in. Touchdown, New Orleans.
The Saints went into Jerry World and beat the Cowboys 44-19. But how about this, Denton? And I'm sure you saw this. When they took a 41-19 lead early in the third quarter, they had scored on 15 of 15 drives to start the season. That's insane. And then they threw an interception, and then they punted, and then they just, you know, the game was over when they took a 41-19 lead. I said this very early in the show when we talked about 11 games of the 14 yesterday and last night were decided by a touchdown or less. It was a really exciting NFL day, that I don't have any data to back this up, but it's just kind of a gut feel based on, you know, teams that start off on fire offensively, scoring a lot of points offensively, that tends to be a sign of something big to come. The Saints have 91 points in their first two games. They scored 47 last week, 44 yesterday. And, you know, here's the thing. It's not like they were feasting on short fields. They had 432 yards on 56 plays. That's 7.7 yards per play. They're outrageously explosive. Rashid Shaheed is their receiver that basically can, he just goes deep and you just throw it and he seems to run away from everybody. I auto-picked him. I say auto. I didn't. My fantasy team auto-picked Rashid Shaheed, which was a good thing for me. Alave's legit good. I mean, really good. And then Alvin Kamara looks like Alvin Kamara again. 115 yards on the ground, had two catches for 65 yards. Derek Carr only threw 16 passes in the game, one of them for an interception. He was 11 of 16 for 243, 15.2 yards per pass attempt. That's outrageous. I guess we got to pay attention to this early season developing story, the New Orleans Saints, who Aaron Schatz from FTN Fantasy, the DVOA metric guy, said before the season started, I really think the Saints, based on a lot of the metrics, are going to be the surprise team this year. So far they are. They get the Eagles this coming Sunday in the Superdome, and they're an underdog in that game. I don't know what to make of Dallas after a defensive performance, but against a team that wasn't very good offensively in Cleveland. And, you know, a week after signing the big deal, Dak threw two picks in the loss. Let's go to Arrowhead for the game of the day.
Butker's kick for the win. He buries it.
So that followed a very kind of controversial play, although with Denton and I talked about it earlier. 4th and 16, Kansas City down 25-23 from their own 35-yard line. You know, they had three timeouts left, Denton, and there was actually a discussion between Romo and Nance, would you punt it? Not when you have Patrick Mahomes. You would never think about doing that. And by the way, not against Cincinnati anyway, because you probably aren't going to get the ball back. And I still thought there was a pretty good chance they would get it, and they got a DPI call on Anthony for Cincinnati, who got there just a tad too early with Rashee Rice. He was making a play on the ball, I guess, but it doesn't matter. You can't run through the receiver. I thought it was a good call. And from that moment, what was really interesting was how conservatively the Chiefs played it. And Butker's kick was a 51-yard kick. I think I saw a stat at one point yesterday that so far in 2 weeks, kickers are 34 of 38 on 50 yards or longer. The 50-yard plus field goal in this league is, I mean, you got to get back to 58, 59, 60 before it becomes, you know, not even a low probability, just lower probability. 50 is a chip shot. They never tried to move the ball beyond where they were at the Cincinnati 36-yard line. They ended up kicking a 51-yard field goal at the gun. They went at 26-25. Really impressed with Burrow in this game. Really impressed with the receiver, who I can't even pronounce his last name, the guy that had the two touchdowns for them. How do you pronounce his last name? You're the Bengals guy.
I only care about the LSU players on the Bengals.
Jamar Chase had a terrible penalty for them, an unsportsmanlike, totally deserved it, which derailed a drive, forced a field goal. Great football game, though. Really, really good football game. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Isaiah Pacheco was hurt in the game, right?
Broken leg, so he'll miss a substantial amount of time.
It is a broken leg.
Yeah.
Wow. That's big for them, because that means they got to go with that rookie from UCLA, who, by the way, had a fumble in the opener against the Ravens. I think he did. And he actually, I think, may have put one on the ground yesterday. He's a big bruiser, but they don't have anybody else at running back. Am I right?
I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is still there, but he also might be hurt as well. So they might have to go find somebody to play running back.
Patrick Mahomes had the fewest passing yards in a win since becoming the Chiefs quarterback. Threw for a 151 in the game. A big part of that was they didn't seem to have the ball enough in the game yesterday. Great football game for week two. I mean, that was a great late window 425, you know, matchup, even though Cincinnati lost last week. And the Bengals looked like the Bengals in that loss. And they face Washington next Monday night. Let's go to Baltimore for the Raiders and the Ravens.
No, it's Minshew. Touchdown! Devontae Adams! And now let's see what Antonio Pierce does.
So, look, I didn't see this game. I wasn't watching this game. The Ravens got called for 11 penalties in the game for 109 yards, and apparently a lot of them were horrible calls. I mean, these weren't Baltimore people saying this, but there was an interference penalty in the end zone with them up by 10. That was a pretty bad call, and there were others as well. They had the game seemingly in control, up by 10 in the fourth quarter, but the Raiders scored the last they scored 13. They outscored them 13-3 down the stretch, and ended up forcing the Ravens, at 23-23 into trying to get a field goal, and they sacked Lamar Jackson. They got the ball back, and they get a walk-off field goal. Ravens are 0-2. I think I didn't see in this game, so I don't know what to say about the calls, and I don't know what to say about what they were offensively yesterday, because I thought they were struggling to try to figure out who they were going to be against Kansas City. Henry had 84 yards on 18 carries, so he didn't have the 13 he had last week, but they had the lead for much of the game. Their offensive line is clearly an issue here early in the season. Max Crosby is an animal. He is top three or four as a pass rusher, top three maybe with Watt and with Garrett. Two sacks, four tackles for loss in the game, multiple pressures on Lamar Jackson, and the Raiders got a solid effort from Gardner Minshew. They could not run the football against Baltimore. 27 yards rushing in the game, but Minshew was 30 of 38 for 276 and a touchdown. And the Raiders dropped the Ravens to 0-2. And the Ravens are in Dallas next week for the big doubleheader game on Fox. Big game for both of those teams. The Raiders, the Ravens potentially staring 0-3, and the Cowboys staring at 1-2. What's the line for that game? I'm going to guess Dallas is a 3-point favorite. I have not looked at that yet. Have you? I'm guessing Dallas -3.
I'm pulling it up now. It is Dallas.
Ooh, Baltimore.
Baltimore 1.5
favorite.
Yeah.
Way off on that one. Wow. That's interesting. All right. Washington now, by the way, an 8-point underdog against Cincinnati. Let's go to Minnesota for the 49ers and the Vikings.
So far on the Viking defense, second down 9. Darnold getting messy, going deep, and he's got Jefferson. He's got Jefferson. It's a foot race downfield with Brown. Shifting gears. Getting a block. That's 6.
How about a 97-yard touchdown pass from Sam Darnold to Justin Jefferson? I think I said this during the summer and said it last week, even before the opener. I think Darnold's a perfect fit. I think this is the fit, the Kevin O'Connell, the Shanahan scheme, and they talked a lot about Sam Darnold in San Francisco last year, about how good he looked, even though he was backing up Brock Purdy. And you got Jefferson, you've got Jordan Addison, they don't even have Hockenson back yet. Their defense improved last year with Brian Flores, who can really scheme it up. And the 49ers were without McCaffrey, and they were on a short week, you know, after that Monday night win. There's the league again. You know, the most impressive team of last week loses outright as a 5-point favorite in their next game. The Vikings off to a very, very surprising 2-0. It's one thing to beat the Giants, and it's another to beat the 49ers, even on a short week. That's a good game next week, Minnesota hosting the Houston Texans. Let's go to Detroit for the Bucks and the Lions.
First and 10 at the 11-yard line. Mayfield going to run again. Baker up the middle, inside the 5. Mayfield lunging, touchdown!
How about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? You know, it didn't go well for them yesterday. They ran 47 plays to Detroit's 83 offensive plays. How good are the Bucs defensively? They're excellent defensively. They're well coached defensively, and they were injured defensively, and they still allowed just 16 points on 83 plays, Denton. They ran 36 more offensive plays than Tampa Bay did. Two turnovers were big, and we talked about our struggles in the red zone. How about Detroit 1-for-7 in the red zone against the Bucs? Jared Goff threw for 300, but threw two critical picks. Baker Mayfield and the Bucs didn't have the ball much, but when they had it, they made it. They made it work for them, and they win the game 20-16. That is as crazy as you'll see. The other team had 36 more offensive snaps than your team did, and yet your team won the game. That may be one. I'm looking through the recap to see if there's any information on whether or not that is an all-timer. That doesn't even seem right. The Bucks go to 2-0. The Lions, after their big Sunday night win, they drop to 1-1 on the season. Let's go to Houston for Sunday night football. Caleb Williams against C.J. Stroud.
Quarter. Second and long. Stroud throws in the middle. It's Collins. Flag is down as Collins goes to the end zone for a touchdown.
How good is Nico Collins? I mean, another elite receiver. 8 catches, 135 yards on 10 targets. I watched this game. I had Chicago plus. I actually had them plus 7. I found a 6.5 Denton and bought it to 7, so I won. But the smell test was a push because I gave them out at plus 6. So Caleb Williams struggled in this game. There's no doubt about it. There were moments for him in the first half in particular. He was under siege the entire night. The Chicago offensive line, did a poor job. There were probably opportunities. He got sacked 7 times in the game. He was beaten to a pulp, but there was major frustration too, because when he had opportunities, he just didn't get the ball even close to DJ Moore or Roma Dunze in big spots. They had the ball down 6 with a chance to go win the game. For me, though, the story of the night, if you watch Sunday Night Football, I mean, Chris Collinsworth was on his knees talking about Caleb Williams. I like Caleb Williams. I think he's going to be a good quarterback. I do. He has gotten off to a rather rough start. He threw for 93 yards last week. They got bailed out by defense, special teams, Will Levis, who's terrible. Last night, he was 23 of 37 for a 174, 2 interceptions, 7 sacks. And, like, when he threw an interception, Collinsworth was talking about how it was a great throw, great play. No, he had some terrible throws. He had some terrible decisions. He looked okay at times. I'm not saying that he didn't, but that had to be trending on Twitter last night. Collinsworth was foul to listen to it. It was so not objective. It sucks because Tirico's the best Denton, and Collinsworth now is ruining that broadcast. Ruining it. And if you've noticed, now since PFF isn't the juggernaut it used to be, and people have fled PFF recently, and whatever. I mean, I think we've always known they don't have all the answers, right? You don't even hear him mention PFF during the broadcast. It used to be a PFF broadcast with Collinsworth because he owns it, or he's a part owner. What was he doing last night with Caleb Williams? Let's go to New England for Seattle and the Patriots.
Myers from 31 yards out. Dixon places it down. And the Seattle Seahawks go to 2-0.
Yeah, 2-0. By the way, in that game, the Patriots, who won last week against the Bengals, they had a fourth quarter lead. They were up 20-17. Jason Myers kicked a game tying field goal with under a minute to go, and then they couldn't get anything done on their opening drive, the Patriots, and then Seattle did get into field goal range for that game winner. In that game, by the way, Antonio Gibson, 11 carries, 96 yards for the Patriots, 8.7 yards per carry. I think he was supposed to sit. I think he was banged up after last week. Yeah, we'll see what happens with Gibson there. Geno Smith in Seattle, long trip, 1 o'clock kickoff after, you know, a nice win in week one over the Broncos. You just want to get out of there with a win. They did. They start off quickly, and they, you know, it's not about who you play, but it's when you play them. They play the Dolphins next week at home. Probably no Tua in the game. They haven't signed Tannehill yet, have they? I don't think so. Good win for Seattle. DK Metcalf and Smith Njigba are just such a great pair. Look, you got to have a number one in this league at wide receiver. You also have to have a legit number two. Those two guys, listen to what they combined for. 22 catches for 246 yards on 30 targets. That's Geno Smith quarterbacking. I mean, he's solid, but you got to have guys that can get open and make plays. Let's go to Arizona for another stunner in terms of the way the game played out. Rams and Cardinals.
fake to Connor. Murray on the rollout. Looking deep for Harrison! Marvin Harrison Jr. to the end zone! Touchdown again!
So last week, Harrison had the one catch, I think, for 4 yards. Or, you know, people, oh, my God, he's going to be dead. Thank God the Giants didn't have to take him. They got Neighbors. 4 catches, 130 yards, 2 touchdowns. But really, Kyler Murray was the story. Perfect passer rating, a 98.2 QBR, 17 of 21 for 266, 3 touchdowns, no picks. Had another 59 yards rushing on just 5 totes. James Conner rushed for 100+. I'm not a big Kyler Murray guy. I readily admit that. But because I think a lot of those plays, he's running around and you don't know what's going on. But they got some weapons. Trey McBride's big time for them. Harrison Jr. is a massive add for them. The Rams were banged up heading into this game. Okay, so they had some injuries, which is why part of the reason Arizona went off as a favorite in the game. But 41-10, the Rams are 0-2 with the 49ers coming to town. Let's go to Nashville for Aaron Rodgers and the Jets against the Titans.
Down today for New York. Give it to him. Allen cuts it to the outside. He's gone. Touchdown, Jets.
That's our guy, Braylon Allen. We love him from Wisconsin. They have Breece Hall. They got a good running back tandem, but Allen had a touchdown rushing, had a touchdown catching the ball. Garrett Wilson, big time. Tennessee's good defensively. I think we have figured that out so far through 2 weeks, that they've got a pretty good defensive football team. Will Levis isn't. I don't think he's going to be the answer personally. Aaron Rodgers, 18 to 30 for 176 yards, 2 touchdowns, did not turn the ball over, and the Jets get a 24-17 win. They have the Thursday night game this week at home against the Patriots. Let's go to Carolina for the Chargers, trying to get to 2-0 with Jim Harbaugh.
Backfield. Hurst in motion. Herbert to throw again. Throws to the end zone. Wide open Johnston. His second score of the day.
Oof. Carolina. Oh, boy. It doesn't look like my over on their 5.5 is going to work. They're terrible so far. It's early, but the Chargers went in there. They rushed for 219. How about J.K. Dobbins so far? An early candidate, by the way, for comeback player of the year and perhaps even offensive player of the year. He's rushed for 131 and 135 last week. He's averaging 9.9 yards per carry. They had Gus Edwards, the Ravens' backfield, in effect, who went for 18 for 59. You know Harbaugh wants to throw it and make it easy on his quarterback, who was outstanding, 14 of 20, but only for 130 yards. Quentin Johnston, by the way, the receiver from TCU, he looks like he's developing into something for them. Remember, Mike Williams and Keenan Allen gone, so receiver was going to be an issue. Bryce Young, there were some highlights I saw that were just wretched. A 6.4 QBR. He passed for 84 yards in the game. 26-3, the final. The Chargers are 2-0. Let's go to Jacksonville for the Browns and the Jags.
From the 2, Lawrence needs to get rid of it. Can't. Safety, Alex Wright.
Yeah, Cleveland may not be very good on offense. They may have issues with their quarterback, but they are still really good defensively. Trevor Lawrence got sacked 4 times, got sacked for safety. He was 14 of 30 for 220 yards. Some big completions. Brian Thomas, 66-yarder in the game, the other LSU wide receiver. But Cleveland defensively was too good, and they beat Jacksonville 18-13 after getting smoked last week by the Cowboys. Jacksonville off to an 0-2 start. How about Pittsburgh and Denver? Could they start the season 2-0?
Fields to the end zone. It's caught. Washington for the Steelers' touchdown.
So, look, through the first 2 weeks of the season, the three rookie quarterbacks who were starting, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, and Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels clearly off to the best start among the three that are playing. Bo Nix, pretty bad yesterday. I saw some of the game. I had that up on one screen and had Chiefs Bengals up on the main one. He's so inaccurate throwing the ball downfield. It's almost like he has to throw those line of scrimmage throws to be effective. And Pittsburgh defensively, Denton, good God, they swarm. I mean, between Highsmith and Watt had another sack, had multiple quarterback pressures. Queen and Hayward and Minka Fitzpatrick. I know that last week it was Atlanta, and this week, and Atlanta was supposed to be decent offensively. I know it's Denver, but they nearly pitched a shutout. I have to mention one thing in this game. So Sean Payton, you know, always considered to be pretty good as a head coach, in-game strategist. They kicked a field goal with a minute 54 left in the game to make it 13-6, and they only had one timeout left. And they chose to kick the ball deep instead of trying an onside kick. That may be the biggest. I can't imagine that he didn't know you have to kick an onside kick because we only have one timeout left. That means after three plays, we're going to get the ball back with about 15 seconds to go with the length of the field to go. I think I don't know if he explained it after the game. I'm going to assume that he thought he had three timeouts left. It's a major gaffe. But if you really chose not to kick an onside kick with one timeout and a minute 50 to go needing a touchdown, that's one of the dumbest things you'll ever see a coach do. We'll finish it up with a couple of Monday night thoughts and two things that I did not mention in my recap about the 21-18 win over the Giants. That's next. So the two things that I wanted to mention real quickly is on their final drive, I think they missed a delay. The delay a game thing, the delay a game thing drives me nuts now because I think they're letting the clock go to zeros and then it's one extra beat after that. But I thought there was a clear delay of game on their final drive. And I also thought on the 3rd and 10 that there was a false start. That they missed on the Giants. And I was upset because they had called so many false starts on Washington. And then the last one I have is, as we've been going through the morning, I've just been watching a little bit more of the defense here. I don't have the all 22 up. But I told you early in the show that I think, while I'm not going to rely on advanced numbers this week after another bad defensive performance, I hate to say this, Ian, I think Daron Payne actually played well. I know I'm a big Daron Payne fan, but the dude was in the backfield consistently. They could not block him. And Denton just told me to look at the PFF numbers that somebody posted, and Daron had the second highest PFF number in the game. But I don't want to reference PFF numbers, not after that crappy defensive performance. But I think the issue, honestly, defensively, is more the ends than the tackles. I'm not even sure it's Wagner or Luvu. I think it's the ends. I don't think John Allen John Allen did not have the impression to me that Payne did. But, yeah, there you go. All right, we'll have a lot tomorrow. Chris Russell next.